now you gotta put a unicorn next to your name. Oh my god, bro, they thought
Wait, what is this terminology?
Oh my god.
Yeah, what are you talking about, unicorn?
A unicorn is that people that a couple brings in to fuck together.
No!
Okay, I was right. Okay, I was right. I literally thought that's exactly what he was saying. No! I literally thought that's what he was saying. He said, Jeff, he said Kobe was the unicorn. Oh my
god. Kobe was a unicorn. Oh my god.
No, not that.
Just Jokes Podcast. My name is Joshua Chapman, aka Slim Balor, aka Baby Giannis, aka Mr. Take Your Girl in Front Your Face. I'm here with my co-host first, Jesse Pink.
Yo.
Aka Dolomite P, aka Baby Samoa Joe, aka Groovy Grizzly. Why? Because he keeps it raw on you hoes. Next, it's Kobe Price.
What up?
Aka the homie Kobe, aka Mr. The Price is Right, aka Kobe. And last but certainly not least, Derek Small, aka D Smalls, aka Anthony Mackey Jr., aka damn, Derek, where'd you find this pod? Shout out to Dre for everything behind the scenes and the intro music. We appreciate you, sir. Thank you all so much for listening to the inaugural episode of It's Just Jokes. So what we are is four friends, and we're going to be talking about some very serious topics sometimes. There will be episode about our relationships and Black fatherhood and, you know, pretty much everything under the sun. Like today we'll be discussing why 2020 sucks. But in between, we gonna find them jokes. We're gonna find room to joke on each other, to crack on each other, to make jokes about the stuff that's going on, because life is hard and you just need to laugh and shit, and not take this too seriously. So having said that, what is going on, my boys? How y'all doing?
No. The real question is, what's going on with you? We're going to talk about Black fatherhood. You got some news you want to drop real quick?
No.
You got some news that you want to drop on the podcast? Black fatherhood? What's going on with you, boy?
Kobe. First of all, we talked about this in a pre-production meeting. Second of all, it has been 84 years since I felt the touch of a woman, all right? It has been so long.
That's on you. I got my dick sucked last night. That's on you, dog. She wore her mask and I wore my glove.
You said you still got to get it in regardless.
Wait, nigga, you at my house.
And he said so? He said, what that mean?
I swear to God, Jesse. I swear to God. If you was at my house, I'm beating the brakes off of you, nigga.
You beat the brakes off me, I broke her back in, so you know, I
wow.
guess that's how the world works.
Wow, you're capping,
bro. Why would I get my dick sucked at your crib, nigga? No,
I don't know.
No,
oh Jesus, what's going on with the rest of you? God damn it,
I'm doing fabulous.
Yeah. Derek, what you are you okay? You good?
No,
yeah, man, you know, just chilling here in St. Louis. You know, in St. Louis, Missouri, for all my Missouri residents out there, you know.
So we can't really see you, Derek. How come? Why is that?
It's because I'm a broke boy, Jesse. I can't afford lights. So I'm just sitting here in the dark. You know, it is what
my electric bill was 10 cents a day. You can help this broke ass nigga afford a lamp.
No, honestly, like send me an Amazon link, like keep it under 20, you know. I work at a high school, so, you know, we don't make no money. So,
what's the Cash App, Derek? What's the Cash App for Zelle, Derek?
The Zelle is DerekSmall.World@gmail.com. You know, Zelle, I use Zelle because I'm an adult. You know what I'm saying? So,
right.
Max.
Yeah.
Max. This should be a segment, to be real with y'all. Send Derek something. Get his Venmo out there. Get his Zelle. Get his.
You know what?
I'm gonna start sending him stuff.
You know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna have a begging segment. Like, what's his name on All the Smoke?
Like Steven Jackson.
I'm gonna have a begging.
He begs for like apparel and shoes. You're gonna be out here begging for like clothes, lamps,
shoes.
Hey, bro, groceries. Where you got chain at?
It's like, is this nigga actually homeless and he just has a green screen up or something? Like, what the fuck?
It's a production. Look, it is a production.
Jeez.
Oh, man. But
no, everything's been smooth. I mean, we're about to get into it about why this year hasn't been so smooth, but this pandemic, 2020 has been the most grim year that I can ever remember. But at least in this moment right now, I mean, things are – I'm cautious to say it, but they're okay. Knock on all the wood I got.
I will say this. 2020 made 2016 not look like shit.
Man, listen, we thought all these like previous years were like bad. Like I thought 2019 would be like, 2019 was kind of tough. No.
2016 was a horrible year. This year, I don't know. 2016 and 2020 going neck and neck this year, bro. These were the
you're capping, bro. You're capping 2020. Sucks like well, front to back.
Really? What's name one thing that made this year suck? What's the first thing that made this year suck, Kobe?
No, let's go into it. Let's actually get into it then. The first thing, yeah. The ironic part is, I don't know about y'all, but for me, I came into the year feeling good, right? The new year came in.
It was cold as hell here, but yeah.
Well, yeah, sure. I was traveling a little bit more, enjoying life, work. Everything was smooth. And then I'll remember. Because I was at work, and I was with Anthony Chang, the Miami Herald, Miami Heat writer, and I'm at my laptop. I get a message from a friend in the group chat, and it's TMZ. Kobe Bryant dead after helicopter accident. I'm like, what? Like, this guy be tripping, but it's TMZ. It's TMZ. So I'm like, for a solid minute and a half, I'm doing my work typing. I don't move. And I like turn my laptop over to Anthony. I'm like, you want to like see this? This is after practice that we went to. I'm like, you want to like look at this with me? Cause like, I can't comprehend this on my own. Like this doesn't make sense. And that was the first sign to me that 2020 was going to be just one of those years.
Bro, it was so wild. Cause then you put it in our group chat. And I remember I was in Derek's apartment with my ex because I was flying out of St. Louis that day. And we were like making food or whatever, just chilling. And I'm also teaching Derek how to cook. So, you know, there's that. I don't remember what we were making. But like, I remember I turned to him, I'm like, bro, did you see what Kobe just put in the chat? And he was like, what? No. I was like, Kobe died. Like Kobe Bryant died. I'm like, wait, what? Like, it was just so, like, I think the part that made it so unbelievable is that we found out that Kobe was just dead. Like, we didn't hear that he got into a helicopter crash and he was fighting for his life or, like, anything like that. It was just, like, he's just gone. And that's it.
Yeah, like, I can literally remember Josh's face, bro. Like, I was at the stove and everything, and I was just, like, making, like he said, whatever we were making. And Josh was literally, like, there frozen, bro. Like, he was like, I don't know what to think right now. Like, cause it was just unreal. Like that he was such a huge figure, right? Like not only in the basketball world, but just in general. And then like you said, for us not to get any type of like context, except for the fact that like, oh, he's just dead. Like it hit us like a brick wall, man, for real. I remember that day vividly at my old apartment. Yeah.
I agree with that. I remember I woke up, I turned to the left, I got my phone in my right hand, I looked up, and Kobe just sent that message in the group chat that Kobe Bryant is dead, not fighting for his life, he's in critical condition. He and his lovely daughter, Gianna, are dead, as well as the family members that was in that helicopter crash with him that were a part of that, the coach, and that was also correct me if I'm right, like the coach that was on the helicopter as well as the coach's family too.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah,
like they were dead, and it was just I just stood there. No, I just laid there. I turned my phone down, and I just looked at the ceiling, and I think I just stood there for 30 minutes. It was just unbelievable because that was the most randomest thing. Like, I did not think that was going to happen. Like, Kobe Bryant just dead quick? Like, what? It was okay. So for me, how I thought 2020 was just gonna be. I thought the month of January was just gonna be on some bullshit. Because of how.
Because also, wait, hold on. Also, remember. Oh yeah, the first 4 days, it was like we got into it with like Iran or something like that. And it was like, yeah, there might be World War III.
Yeah, North Korea was cutting up. There was a nuclear deal with Iran. You started to see first signs of the coronavirus popping up. And then there was something that President Doofus did. I forgot what it was. He does a lot of dumb stuff.
He does so much dumb stuff.
It was those first 4 days. And I was like, it's only 4 days in, and this is already nuts, right? But I was just like, okay, you know, whatever, right? There's always international political conflicts. That always happens. No one up until now in international political history is willing to start another World War III because we know what the catastrophic events that will happen. So I was like, okay, fine. But Kobe Bryant dying, just dead after a helicopter crash? Yeah, that just hit me. That stunned me for the rest of the day. It really put a harsh reality that anyone can go at any minute. And the sad part is that you start, and we talked about this too, how Kobe was really starting to enjoy life after basketball and how he was on his way to be a great writer and great filmmaker.
Yeah. It's also crazy. I remember about that day is that there was so much going on surrounding like who was actually in the helicopter. So first it was like him and all of his daughters. And then it was him and just Gianna. But it was also like him, Gianna, and then like Rick Fox. And like people were calling it.
Who brought Rick Fox in this?
But it was also one of those things that like is not so far because we didn't have any details about anything else that was happening, like where the helicopter was even going to. Saying that Kobe and Rick Fox were in the same helicopter doesn't even seem like out of the realm of possibility. Right. So then we're like, damn, like Rick Fox too? Like, and it was just like, I think one of the, obviously it was a tragic death, but also one of the things that someone else pointed out is that we haven't lost a lot of basketball greats to this point. Like Bill Russell is still around, right? Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is still around. Like most of the guys that have been greats, like Hall of Fame, like high level players, like MVP type players, like they're still around. They're still passing around knowledge to like, you know, Oscar Robertson, like all these guys are still here and you can still see them at games and they get their flowers during the All-Star game weekend or whenever. Like, and for Kobe, for someone that so dedicated himself not only to the game, but like to, you know, even just taking care of his body and all this sort of thing, like, you know, someone that was, and like you said, visibly enjoying life and willing to give back to the game, not only the NBA, but putting on for the WNBA and all that sort of stuff. Like to see him gone in that instance was just like, it was just heartbreaking, right? Like it was just like, couldn't believe it. Like that's dude you would have thought that was going to like live forever.
I never even thought about it like that, the NBA point in terms of, I mean, because a lot of the NBA greats, I mean, even if you played in the 60s, you still be 70, 80. So you're still in a pretty good point in your life. I mean, I'm thinking about it right now. Russell, Kareem, MJ, Magic, Bird. I mean, they're all alive. I mean, if you want to keep going down the list, Hakeem, Big O is like, these guys are still around kicking it. I mean, I think that's one
Jerry, of the benefits. Jerry West, bro. Like,
that's a great point. Jerry West is running a whole team in the Los Angeles Clippers. Right.
Exactly.
I think the only one that you can, the first one that came to my mind when you said that was Pistol Pete and Bob Cousy. But right. Now you go into like the 50s.
Yeah, exactly.
With Cousy.
Yeah. To your point, Josh, like Kobe Bryant has had such an impact. Kobe Bryant is a sheer example of someone who is studying every detail of one thing, studying it in and out, in order to become the best. We have literally saw him copy every single move, gesture, and even the mannerisms of Michael Jordan.
Right.
He had that down and pat. Kobe Bryant is a metaphorical, a living example of not only in order to be the best, you got to beat the best, but because we have MJ and Kobe were in the league around the same time, but they weren't in the same prime in order to battle each other out, right? But Kobe was the example of, if you want to be the best, then you have to study from the best.
Exactly.
You literally have to copy from the greats. Kobe was a literal example of that. Kobe was an example of the mama mentality. You have to work hard, you have to play hard, you have to be the best. That is a mentality that everyone can pretty much enjoy and celebrate, and that can be adapted to anything. If you want to be the best and you know, in film writing and filmmaking, then you're going to study. You're going to start looking at all these films, and you're going to study to be the best. You want to be the best and being one of the best, like, sports journalists, like, in, let's say, Miami, you might want to study some of them. You might also want to be the best.
If you want to be the best, you know, rapper, then you have to study rap battles for a living.
Right. You got to study rap battles for a living. Like. Then you also got to make sure that you're not offending people. Because that shit right there is going to get you punched in the fucking face. Because when you said my friend.
but to that point, I think it was Bomani Jones that made this point that, like, Kobe was not afraid to take things that worked from other successful people because they're successful for a reason. I think that's something, you know, as this podcast continues to evolve, like, we're definitely, I'll openly admit that some of the ideas that we have come off of the back of other successful podcasts that we've seen. But yeah, like you said, if you want to be a screenwriter, you know, you not only have to watch movies, but then go and read, like, different people's, like, how they write and how they express things and all that sort of stuff. Kobe was definitely a shining example of that. And that's why his untimely death was so jarring, I think, to all of us.
So going back to Jesse's point even about the mama mentality, right? I know we all remember that commercial where he was, like, in the front of the room, like, you know, talking about the mama mentality and, like, you know, if you want to, you know, if you're at the top, you got to go even higher. And everybody in the crowd was just like, you know what? Like, what is dude talking about? But, like, when you think about that mindset, it's really actually applicable to so many things that you do in life. Just because, like, my mom has even always told me, like, why settle for being, you know, not mediocre necessarily, but, like, why settle for being average, right? Like, the people who you see make impacts on the world are not average people, right? They're people that have gone above and beyond in their different fields and aspects of life. So I think that's one thing that, like, I'm even myself trying to get better at, like, in terms of just, like, not settling for, like, oh, I can do this way and it'll be okay, right? But how can I, like, make this great? You know, even when I'm putting on events, you know, for people in the community, like, how can I make this event worthwhile and not just, oh, it was cool? Like, no, they need to walk away from my event saying that shit was lit or, you know, that shit was cool. You know what I mean? Like,
facts.
We're not basic, so.
And I think that's kind of why people were so hit so hard by Kobe's death, because he wasn't simply a person or simply a amazing basketball player. He was an ideology. He exemplified greatness, and he demanded it from himself every single day, and he demanded it from his peers and all walks of life. And it wasn't just basketball, like we've been saying.
I think also with Kobe, it was like, I think for the first 15 or 16 years of his basketball career, he was so singularly focused on the basketball aspect. And then at some point the flip switched and he's like, oh, I need to take care of other stuff. He started doing, you know, the vino and the production company and all that kind of stuff. But, like, you can demonstrably see that he enjoyed overall life more. And I think that's the bigger takeaway, is that, yeah, you definitely got to work hard and you definitely got to put in the time and the effort for the things that you want. But then you also have to, like, remember to, like, stop and smell the flowers and stuff along the way and to enjoy yourself and to have fun and to, like, not be so hard on yourself, right? Like, you'll get what you want. And I think we all saw The Last Dance. You'll get what you want. But if you watch that, Michael Jordan doesn't look like a dude that's, like, happy where he is in life. He has everything he wants, but it's just like, okay, but now what? Like, what's the next thing to do? It's just like, Mike, you can just chill. Like, you can live. Like, it's cool. And it doesn't look like he's happy in that space. So that's the biggest thing I took away from Kobe.
Yeah, you have everything you want, but you don't have everything that you want. You really see that. And interesting enough, that's really the difference between Mike and Kobe. Because granted, we haven't visually seen as much of Kobe being really happy, you know, as he was in the NBA, because all we wanted to see from Kobe was just hooping. But you know, we can't forget, like, during that time, he made a beautiful family. And so, and you can really see the way how he talked about his daughters, particularly the way how he talked about Gianna, God bless her soul. The way how he just talked about them, you can tell that, like, he loved them, and you can pretty much tell that he was so happy that he can finally spend time with them. Whereas, you know, with Mike, it was more, it's a little bit more different with Mike. It's a little bit more different. Like, we don't really know that much about, like, how close Mike is to his children, anything of that nature. I'm not saying, this is not to say that Michael Jordan and his children or even, you know, don't have the best relationship, but it's just a different, like, Mike has never really talked much about his family.
Yeah.
As much as that we've seen from Kobe. We have enough interviews from Kobe Bryant to know that he loves his daughters. He loves his family, which is why we got this the hashtag girl dad. We literally got that from Kobe, because Kobe loves raising girls. I'll just say this in my Umar Johnson voice just to break this. Kobe Bryant, mama mentality is a reflection of the industrialist capitalist mindset of the early 19th century that Black folks have adopted since they have been freed from slavery.
Keep your third eye open.
Keep your third eye open.
But no, like, what's the cost of freedom, or what's the cost of happiness, right? Like, I think that's something we can, we'll table, we'll come back to that at some point.
Yeah, we're getting metaphysical. I'm sure my philosophical professor will like this part.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm just joking.
And to your guys' point, I think the moment you guys are talking about when it kind of flipped the switch where Kobe starts to enjoy life more, he started doing all those outside projects, was after, I think he mentioned it in interviews, after the Achilles tear.
Yeah.
You think about it, like, that's the one thing supposed to be like this awful thing, but that helped set his life up for probably, I mean, it was unfortunately not as long as he would have imagined all of us, but even in the midst of a tragedy, like, saw a career-altering injury, he found other avenues of life. And I think he even said in an interview, I remember saying, it's crazy that he said it, but life is too short to be bogged down. Mm-hmm. You gotta keep going, you gotta keep pushing. There's so much great, paraphrasing, of course, but there's so much greatness out there. You can't be bogged down for too much. And it's crazy that he said it because of how his life ended. And now you can see he lived it to the fullest. But also this year has been such an easy year to feel bogged down, not simply because of his death, but because everything that came after his death.
Yeah.
We're still in the middle of it. We're still in the middle of this pandemic, very much in the middle of it. We're not, let's
talk about that.
Yeah. So, the Sono coronavirus 19 strand of the coronavirus disease was actually created in 2019 and just decided to roll its ugly ass into 2020. All right, confession time. My ass probably got it in November. I'm not going to hold y'all. I probably got it in
November. This nigga was sick as a dog.
Because when I think about it, I had these same symptoms as a lot of people had. Now,
that's also something Black people have been loving to say. It's like, you know, I think I had the coronavirus back in December, January.
Right, right. But and, you know,
yeah, it's the OG version.
Man, listen.
It's like the OG Popeye sandwich. Man, I think I had that back when it first dropped. That
way back.
Way back. But in all seriousness, though, this pandemic has done a lot. And, okay, really,
wear y'all masks,
please. I want to go outside. Please. Wear your mask.
Wear a mask.
Get tested.
Wear
Don't
a mask.
Touch anyone with your dirty ass hands. I want to go outside. There's things I want to do.
Things. Thanks.
You shut your mouth, Derek Small.
There have been so many things that this that COVID-19 has done. One of the things that you can particularly see that COVID-19 has done is that it's definitely had a disproportionate impact on low-income marginalized communities in the United States, particularly with African Americans. You can see, in particularly in urbanized communities, that African Americans are suffering from either pre-existing environmental catastrophes or pre-existing detriments that are a result of systematic oppression and systematic racism, that COVID-19 has had a large impact on those communities. And you can pretty much see this as a result of, you know, those that are pretty much impacted by it. You know, those that are, that have rates of diabetes, hypertension, even asthma, they're saying that those are often the victims that are impacted by it. And It's an interesting article created by Ken Yatamata Taylor that talks about this, and she particularly outlines how for a lot of local officials, Lori Lightfoot in particular, or even federal officials such as Donald J. Trump and the rest of his goons in the White House, putting a large onus on African-Americans in terms of like staying healthy during COVID-19. But a lot of these, the issues that are happening that from COVID-19 are a result of pre-existing environmental and systematic catastrophes. For example, asthma. Asthma is one thing that particularly impacts the African-American community a lot. What a lot of people don't realize is that a large portion of case studies that which are in Moseyville, Louisiana, or even back in the yards of Chicago, or even a little village in Chicago, you have a lot of industrial plants that dump a lot of their pollutants, or that are given grants from local politicians such as Lori Lightfoot that are protecting the business interests of the city and allowing them to dump a lot of their pollutants in these areas and allowing them to stay there. Or is an example of lead contamination that you see not only in Flint, or you can see housing discrimination, housing, dilapidated housing that happens in Baltimore. So all these things fall apart of it too when we're talking about the impact of COVID-19. We can also talk about how it's had such a mental health impact on African-Americans in particular. And there's Dr. Snead has talked about this at Michigan State as to how African-Americans culturally, so to speak, like African-Americans culturally, whenever there's a funeral, we all come together, we all coalesce. There's been a lot of deaths that's happened in the African-American community because of COVID-19. And we have lost particularly the ability to touch and to feel and to congregate. That has actually had the mental strain. And she actually mentioned, Dr. Snead has mentioned this in her articles, in that we have transitioned from going from thinking of when will I get COVID-19 to will I be next to die from COVID-19? And so you're seeing that. And I know I'm conflating both the impact of the virus with race, ethnicity, and disparities, but that's where we at right now with COVID-19. Because we can broadly talk about how it's impacting everybody. We can broadly talk about how it's impacting how it's touching people, you know, so like how we interact with people. We can talk about that. But when we get even more into a critical lens of this society and talk about one of the original sins of the society, which is slavery, or we can talk about how there's a strip of indigenous land, or how we can talk about how we're impacting a lot Latinx and our Hispanic brothers and sisters, we see how that history also impacts what's going on in this community too. So it's seriously a lot that's going on with COVID-19, man. Seriously
a Professor lot. Pink in the building. God damn, I feel like I got a 50-minute lecture watched on 4x the speed. God damn, like
man, I thought
I thought I just logged into Canvas or something, man.
Man, listen. Boy, I don't know what to add to that.
But no, that's real. That's real, because when you do talk about this pandemic, you do have to also recognize that yes, it's affecting everyone, not just in this country, but it's affected everyone around the world. But at least in the United States, it has had very strong effects, especially on Black people, especially on minorities, but especially on Black people, in the way that you see a lot of Black people, like Jesse was saying, they have asthma, and asthma is one of the underlying conditions. If you have it, you are more susceptible to death because of it. And that's, but it goes back to, why did you have asthma in the first place? What was your environment like? So no, that's real. Where did you grow up? That's when you'll find out.
And it's kind of crazy to me. Oh, my bad. Go ahead.
No, go.
I was just going to say, to even like kind of bounce off that point on like a different side of it, it's kind of crazy to remember that like there were people out there saying that because they were Black, they weren't going to catch
it. Yes.
Yeah.
Like, to me, like that whole period of the quarantine, I was just like, no. I was like, I don't think that's how this works. But okay.
It hasn't worked with anything. Not a single thing in this entire, my entire lifetime. If it hurts white people, it's going to find a way to hurt Black people even more. Unless it's hidden in a mayonnaise box, container, whatever. That's the only way they would keep it away from us.
What's also interesting about, well, not interesting, but to Jesse's very elaborative point, like Black people also have a very deep-seated distrust of government, right? And for like good reason, because the government has never done anything specifically for us in the strict interest of Black people. It's always been like we've had to fight for something, and then it's sort of, it's overwhelming. It's like not even overwhelming public support, but it's like this has to change, right? That sort of thing. Or if we are given something, it's to also benefit other minority, like we're the spearheads of that, or you know, simply just how we got to this country in the first place. And so, yes, like Derek said, like people thought at first black people couldn't get it. And then black people were all like, oh, okay. Like, you know, that sort of thing. And then even going further down the line, whenever there's a vaccine, like I can't tell you how many people I know that have said like, nah, I'm not really about getting that COVID vaccine.
Literally somebody.
And like, I'm biased because I work at one of the places that makes a vaccine that like has had their hand in making literally every vaccine that has been made for this country. They made Ebola vaccines that have basically wiped out mild strains of Ebola over in Africa and all that sort of thing. Like they made Zika way back when Zika was a thing. And not only that, but I have, my little brother is someone that is immune compromised. So every year we had to get the flu shot, right? Like that wasn't a choice in the matter. So it's always been something that I've done and it's never had any negative side effects for me personally. Like it might be like for that day, like my arm's a little bit sore or whatever, but it's not something that, you know, hasn't happened that like that has happened negatively for me. And so to see people saying like, no, I'm not going to get it. I hope y'all do though, but I'm not, you know, how are we so sure that this hasn't been like, it's equal parts, like frustrating and I get it. And it's frustrating because like, we've literally created vaccines to prevent stuff like this from happening. Like polio used to be a thing. People died from polio on the right. Chickenpox, smallpox, right? Like these are things that have like these are things that used to be a much bigger deal. And then we figured out how to essentially stop it. But on the other hand, I get it. Because like, again, it's the whole government thing. It's Tuskegee experiments, you know, testing on black, and then people dying and not even getting a real, like, it's a complicated matter, but it is also just like, I need for at least some of us to get it so that we can be comfortable and safe and moving in the world again. Like there has to be a herd mentality with this. Like I'm doing this for the betterment of everybody and not just like me sort of thing.
No, that's facts. And like, to your point about the Tuskegee experiment, I mean, it was just released now that, some HBCUs that in Dillon and Xavier, I believe, are maybe Xavier, but I know definitely Dillard, open up with a press statement saying that, you know, they're allowing testing for COVID-19 on their student body. I mean, this is about a week or so before we found out that one of the patients who was being tested for COVID-19 vaccine had has some type of allergic reaction. The news about what Dillard came like weeks after what happened with that patient that had an allergic reaction, apparently so, like to the vaccine. But I'm saying all this to your point with Dillard, and that, yeah, like there was a lot of people that received backlash from the, that was giving backlash to that because there are these examples of the Tuskegee experiment where, you know, it was an unethical 40-year plus experiment on testing on giving African American men in particular syphilis, untreated syphilis, because of the notion that African Americans, for some reason, our body's just immune to any type of disease, any type of struggle known to man. So, you know, it talks a lot about that, and that just opens up what the history of ethical treatments that have happened not only to African-American men, but also African-American women with forced sterilization, and knowing that they have been forced sterilized, and how that's continuing to happen to today, or yeah, being put on medication when you could tell us that simple dieting and exercising helped.
Yeah. So there's been a lot, but I wanted to ask you guys, because we spent a lot of time talking about COVID specifically, but we've been in the house since like the third week of March. And I guess like, what has been the hardest part for you guys from all of this?
I'm not going to lie to you. For me, it's just the monotony,
yeah,
like the simple monotony of just like not knowing, or not even not knowing, knowing what my day is going to look like pretty much. Like if I'm working, I know I'm going to be at my desk from like 9 to 3. You know, just doing stuff. Used to be able to feel comfortable about like texting your friend saying, let's go to X, Y, and Z, you know, to do this. But like, you can't even really feel comfortable doing that anymore. I mean, you can go out to get food, but you're still only driving, you know, in your car and then going to a drive-through and then coming right back, right? You can watch Netflix, you could turn on Disney Plus, but it's like,
that, what, 2-3 hours, you like, all right, well, that was fun. Like, but what do I do now? I mean, it's just like the day-to-day and just not being able to switch it up like you used to. And you made a really good point the other day, Josh, when we were talking on the phone. Coming home used to feel like a sense of relief. Yeah. But like being now that you're in the crib all the time, there's no separation between like working from home and then like chilling.
Yeah. Yeah, that's been the biggest thing for me is that, like, you know, my job is about a 35-minute drive without traffic. But I live in the DMV, so I'd be out the house at like 7:20 in the morning. So it ended up taking me sometimes an hour. Longest I ever been in the car was like 1.5 hours going to work, right? But it was the actual drive to work. And then you get to work, and you're doing stuff there, and then you leave work. I would go to the gym or go get my hair cut or whatever and come home. And then from like 8 p.m., I'm just in the house chilling, not doing anything else. And like, this is like my safe space. This is a space where I can just let my guard down. I'm not doing work. I'm not doing X, Y, Z. And now like everything is here, right? Like I have to find reasons to leave the house and be responsible in leaving the house. Like I had to have a conversation with my family here about going to go get a haircut. Right. Because, and that's not something I would ever talk to them really about, but this is like, okay, I'm trying to make sure that I stay safe and stay vigilant and do all these type of things. And I'm only going to do this until the weather breaks. And then we're going to do at home. Like, it's just a totally different higher level of like, I have to do so many different steps to even feel comfortable leaving the house.
It's weird for me because I was so used to working from home. Like that's just for my job. I, especially in January and February, I would say I was working from home maybe 75% of the time, mm-hmm. just because of how things were set up. So the working from home, that separation between work life and home life, it was already so blended in for me. The biggest struggle, I mean, just to be honest, is just being away from loved ones and loved ones, friends, family, especially because I mean, I do live alone and I live like relatively far. Like it's a three-hour flight to get back to my parents. And even when I get there, it's my parents and my great-great uncle, my great-great aunt. I still have my grandparents who are in Indy. So it's just not being able to see them. And then I don't get to see. It was crazy because when this all happened, it was like when we started to become hyper aware of this, it was early to mid-March. My girl was going to come down here for a week. And we already had two trips booked. We had two trips in March and April booked. And after that, it was like, well, we got to cancel. We didn't see each other for another 4 months because we saw each other in February, but we were going to see each other in March and April, had that figured out, but we didn't get to see each other until June. So that was honestly, that's been the most difficult part, just being away from family. And yeah, Zoom helps. I do a Zoom call on every other Sunday with my mom's side of the family, and FaceTime helps. And it was already a difficult adjustment moving and then having to go as long as I did, 4 months without seeing my girl, my parents, which is the longest time I had gone without seeing them.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a Jeremiah for me because I graduated June 2019 from my institution and I was in a weird limbo world in terms of applying to grad schools, but not necessarily being able to work because I was, you know, shopping around for a grad school. So that pretty much like stationed me home. I was able to be taken care of, you know, financially because I was able to handle my business and like shake some hands in the back.
And move that weight, nigga.
Move that weight. So for those first couple of like months, fall of 2019, you know, I was, you know, already in the crib. Like you didn't know that because, I mean, Josh didn't know that y'all didn't know that because every time y'all asked me what was I doing, I was going salsa dancing.
Nigga, stop the cap. I have your location. Let's not do this. We talk every day, nigga.
I was salsa, like, for real. Like, but, you know, I was salsa dancing. I was going on dates. I was going on movies, you know, just enjoying the beach, eating lunch.
You was booking busy, period.
He was doing more than enjoying the beach, nigga. Enjoying
the beach, bro. You know, I was enjoying sand, all that, you know? It was
dope. He was at a couple beaches.
Couple, bro. Couple swimming in a lot of oceans, dog. But I was already used to kind of just being in the crib. So then when COVID hit, it was like, oh, you have to be in the house. It was just like, okay, I already do this. But to Kobe's point, what started getting me was when everyone wears masks now. I can't hug my aunties as much as I want, because I'm very affectionate with my aunties, especially with the one that passed away earlier this year. Not COVID related, but for other reasons. Like, I couldn't even hug, like, you know, she passed away before COVID, but, you know, I like to hug and kiss my aunties a lot. Like, I love to hug and kiss, like, my little nieces and nephews, and I'm not able to do that, man. One of my closest friend, by calling my sister, you know, she got a beautiful baby boy, and I've only been able to FaceTime him, man. Like, I want to see him. Like, I actually want to see him and, like, have him in my arms and stuff, you know, like, stuff like that. I know I sound like a nigga that's in jail that, like, they ain't got his kids, but I miss, like, you know, seeing my nieces and nephews like that, you know? Like, that's just, I miss that. I miss that touch, that interaction. Granted, I've been still having fun. You know, I've been still, you know, doing things.
Things.
But it's still, you still have to be even more precautious, because yeah. You still have to be like, well, did you get a test? Have you been around anyone that has COVID? I don't know. We might have to reschedule or hang out later. You know, things like that.
I planned to come home for my mom's birthday as a surprise to her. And I wasn't able to do that. Not being able to come, or even just go see, you know, you guys or anything like that. Like, I was trying to, at some point, get down to Miami, hang out with Kobe, and, you know, I don't know about hanging out in St. Louis. That really sounds miserable, to be honest with you. But, you know, see Derek at some point. Like,
he ain't lying. Honestly.
Okay. I will say
that. Okay, people from St. Louis, there's a lot of y'all I'm cool with. But the actual city, bro, like.
Like, there's some decent spots in St. Louis. I ain't gonna hold. St. Louis got some decent Korean-style barbecue. Like, out of all places.
That is oddly specific. But
that, okay. That is very specific.
It's very specific. It is, like, one of the most weirdest places that you would think. But this.
Now, see, hold on. You have a personal beef with St. Louis. I don't know why you even caping for them.
I'm not caping for them. I'm saying that St. Louis, you know, it got some decent eating spots, but it's not popping.
What,
you know,
I would say is they have gyms here and there, right?
Like, yeah, like, they got, like, gyms.
Across the city, they have gyms. But it gets me, and okay, I'm going to clarify this for Josh because he's on the call, right? I'm from the Chicagoland area, but I frequent Chicago, you know, here and there.
Whatever.
So, you know, that's for him, because, you know, I'm from Chicagoland, not Chicago.
Exactly. You are. I don't know why you put that shit in parentheses. You are.
But it's when they try to compare, like, the city of St. Louis to the city of Chicago. That's what gets me, because, like, you know, I've driven around the city of St. Louis, and I've been downtown and, like, other places. And I'm like, the two don't compare. Like, you cannot compare the city of St. Louis to the city of Chicago.
You know what city doesn't do that because they're comfortable in their abilities? Milwaukee. Milwaukee don't do that. Milwaukee, I've never heard one Milwaukee person come up to me and be like, man, Milwaukee better. I have never heard that in my life. Never. You know why? Milwaukee knows where they stand with us. They're comfortable. They're like, hey, bro, you know, they got it. Like, we got some shit too, but, you know, they got it.
Now, that's actually facts. Like, you hear the Detroit-Chicago comparisons, St. Louis-Chicago.
Detroit really
Detroit
can't.
Detroit need to get the fuck out of here.
They,
right? Bro,
they can't. Y'all can't say anything.
And Milwaukee's like, hey, man, we just here. Like, we have,
you know,
nothing.
The best part about Detroit, the bridge that connects Detroit to Toronto. That's the best part. That's the best part about Detroit. The best part. And I said it, nigga. I did. I sure did. You all know why? Because a hit dog gonna holler. Detroit and St. Louis always talk so much shit. You know what city don't? Milwaukee don't say nothing. No, Kansas City don't say
nothing. I was
going
to say, KC rep themselves, but they're not like, oh, we better than Chicago. It's like, yeah, we cool too.
We cool too.
Fire barbecue too.
They like, look, they like, nigga, we got barbecue, bro. Like, you know.
They got barbecue, they got the Jazz Museum, and they got the Negro League Baseball Museum.
Right, but they ain't never like, but we better than Chicago.
And they got Patrick Mahomes. They win automatically.
Cities that are comfortable in themselves don't say nothing.
Facts.
About their cityality. Cities are comfortable in their cityality.
You said cityality. I'm hollering.
Wow. Hey, I need you to, like, go on Twitter later and, like, write that out like a dictionary definition. I need that.
That might be the name of this episode, Cityality, nigga.
Now, before we get too deep into the St. Louis, Detroit slander, did want to make a point about what y'all was saying about the whole mask thing. Yeah. I want to ask you guys, have you felt, because I've definitely felt this, and I'm thinking about, all right, am I going to go see fam? Like, who am I going to see? Like, I've been back to my folks' place twice during this pandemic, but both the first time, I didn't go see, like, my grandparents. Well, no, I didn't make that trip. Because personally, I was like, I've always been on this feeling of, I'm not trying to have to make more, I guess, interactions than I have to. Not because I don't want to, but because I would feel, honestly, guilty if I had it. If I had it and I didn't know, and I brought it to someone, and even if they're fine, I don't know who they're around. I don't know who they're seeing. I don't know what their situation is like. So that's something that I've been having a hard time with. Like, there was back in June, I told myself, like, I'm probably not going to see friends until 2021. I'm not going to go to the gym until 2021. There's just a bunch of things I decided, like, man, once, like, I'm not going to be doing these things until next year. And I didn't want to. I'm not happy about it. But it's like, I don't want to be the guy. I don't want to be a super spreader. I don't want to be the guy who unknowingly brings this into someone's household or something to a friend's family. Like, one of your guys' family, I would hate if, even if I didn't know, deep down, I would wonder, like, oh, shoot, I just saw you guys 2 weeks ago, and now one of your family members is, like, not feeling well. What if I just didn't start not feeling well a couple of days later? I'm like, man, I would feel bad. Like, that's a thing I've been struggling to grapple with.
Yeah, that's definitely facts, because, like, when I came home and, like, late July, right, I saw my mom, my dad, my grandma, and maybe three or four friends. Like, I saw Jesse and Derek and Devin, so that's three. I might have hung out with two other people outside of that. And it was just like, it was very much one of those things that, like, I had to tell people, like, it's like, yeah, I'm home, but this is more of a business trip. And this is more of a, let me go see my people, and because I haven't seen them since Christmas type thing. Like, let me go be around my family, even safely. And not like I'm hanging out with everybody in the city and, like, we're going to go out to eat and do this, that, or the third. Like I can't do that. Like, I can't move that way. So.
Yeah. And I've honestly felt that way too. You know, there's been times where, like, even like when I was sick, like, I tell my mom, like, do not come in my room. Don't even come by me. When I was, you know, when I had diagnosed myself with strep, I started walking around the house with a mask on. Or anytime I cough, I just walk around the house with a mask because I want to have the risk of, like, my family being impacted with it. I will say this. I will say this. I've been responsible. I mean, like, in terms of, like, who I've been around with and stuff, like, I'd be like, look, baby, what's your test results? What's your COVID test results? I've literally done that. When anybody I've gone on a date with, I've been like, what are your COVID test results? I have not shit you not. I have always done. I said, baby, we gonna do this. What them COVID test results looking like? In addition to them STD test results, bro. Well, give me the full document. So, yeah, but, you know, in the middle of me, like, enjoying these lunches, enjoying these dates and stuff, I'm seeing a lot of Black Lives Matter protests and stuff going on because, you know, it's making me very conscious of, again, like, the world that we live in and, like, what's going on. Pardon me.
Two cups.
What's going on? Pardon me about that. So, you know.
It's one of his hoes.
It actually was. But, you know, as I'm, you know, again, grabbing lunch and stuff, eating dinner, you know, and trying to converse with a young lady, I'm hearing the distance, no justice, no peace. And, you know, that just makes me think about Kobe, not only about this impact of COVID-19, but also makes me think about the intense race relations that are going on.
No, that's real, because when this pandemic first hit, I mean, through March and April, I mean, I know all of us, really, more so May, too, all of us were just sitting in the house watching Netflix, watching Disney Plus, whatever. And what really set it all off was George Floyd. The George Floyd murder really set things off. And we've seen these kinds of, I mean, just straight up racism, the brutalization of Black people in the streets continuously throughout our history. But we haven't had it to the point where everybody's just in front of their TVs watching the news outlets to the point where, like, everyone's aware of it. Like, there's no escaping it. You can't escape it because you're supposed to be in the house. You have stay at home orders at most of the largest cities in this country. So everyone has a heightened awareness of what's going on. And you can kind of see that through what happened post George Floyd, in the sense that there was, and there still very much is now, anger, pain, sorrow, that you could feel it in a way that you haven't really felt it in maybe years. Some could argue decades.
Yeah.
Like when you talk about like the stay at home orders and everything like that, like all I can think about is like the countless times I've logged on to like Twitter and seen a lot of these posts where large cities look like they're in a military state almost. Like in their downtown areas, you constantly have like law enforcement officials like monitoring things, harassing folks, you know, when they're literally just standing there, you know, right, expressing how they feel. But the law feels like they need to, you know, harass folks and be like, you can't, you know, be here at X time or, you know, or whatever like that. And the thing I'll say about like this time period in particular, and I'm not discrediting any previous movements at all, so I don't want to come off that way, but this has been, at least in my eyes, one of the more times where it's been consistent. Like people have been protesting for like daily since I can remember, like since the George Floyd incident and everything like that. It just seems like, you know, they're not letting up, as they shouldn't, right? Like this message needs to be relayed, you know, all the time, right? This isn't just a weak thing and then let's go back to life. Like, no, this has to be relayed. So that's the biggest thing that I've seen, is that every time I'm online or hearing about, you know, movements, they're just consistently, you know, bringing the pressure to these officials.
The thing is, we can't go back to regular life. At least we haven't been able to for the past 6 months, because we're still in a pandemic. Like we can't, that has to always be put into the context, into this equation. Even if there was no pandemic, it may have been so strong to the point where we wouldn't go back to quote unquote normal, but we literally cannot go back to normal because this pandemic that we haven't gotten control of isn't allowing us.
Yeah, and that's one of those things that, like, much to Kobe's point, like, we just, there's nothing else to really take your time away from, right? Like, in other previous, like, police sanctioned killings and stuff like that, like, you're upset, obviously, but, you know, there's still class to go to tomorrow, and there's still work to go to. Like, there's still these other things to do. And on top of not only just being at home, like, there's been a big lack of government response in terms of even, like, helping people out with the pandemic itself, right? Like, we got one $1,200 check in the last 6 months.
Run me my stimmy, bro. Like,
you got one $1,200 check from this pandemic. You did. We.
Well, but yeah, so like there was only one of those handed out, and literally every other nation they're like, no, we're gonna do this month by month. Like, people like need food, they need rent, they like, we're gonna cancel. Like, there was no sustained rent relief. There was no sustained sustenance, like any of these sort of things. So add on to that, that there are, even in a pandemic, there are police killings, right? It's just kind of like, yo, what is it gonna take? Like, literally, what is it going to take for any of this to not be in a reality, right? Like, there's a running joke that the Onion puts out every time that there is a school shooting. The headline is like, the only nation in the world asks, like, why, or like, how can this happen here? Like, the only nation where this happens, like, continually asks, like, how can this happen? Like, that sort of thing. And that's where we are in terms of like police brutality. Like, these things don't happen in this sort of way in other places. Like, it just isn't. Like, and Derek said, like, it feels like we're living in we are living in a military state. Like, look how much funding is put towards not only military in general, just like from a federal level, but from like a local level. New York City, I think, puts like billions of dollars towards their police department. And this is, and that's a city like, and there are people on the opposite side that will be like, oh, you want more, so like, what is a social worker going to do? It's like, a social worker, if there's a case where someone like has a gun, like a social worker might get hurt, but everyone's going to go home, right? Like, it's not going to be one of these things where like police too often kill people, especially people of color, when there is, and they're the escalators of violence instead of being a de-escalator. And that's like one of the huge problems. But you also have to realize that policing was created as a way to, like, they were, their initial inception was slave catchers. Like, it goes back to the history. So that's something that they've literally, their main function was the policing of black and brown bodies from its inception. So like, it's just one of those things that like, yeah, it's been continuous, and that's great. But it's also like, can you imagine how exhausting it has to be to have to feel like you're going out in the middle of a pandemic to argue for human rights? Like, that's just like another level of like, why are we here? Why am I doing this? Why do I have to do this?
It's the particular brutality of racism that killed him. A police kneeling on his neck for, I believe, what? Eight minutes and 46 seconds as he pleaded for his breath, has finally brought the country to the conscious awakening of racism that has never ceased to terrorize African Americans. But in all this atrocity, even if we had to choose how he died, either it was from COVID-19, even if it was from cardiovascular death, the underlying death would have been the same. Racism would have killed George Floyd. Either way it went. Whether it was as a result of being a part of a group that has been underrepresented historically, so therefore they get disproportionately impacted by diseases and other public health issues, or not being able to be treated medically the same, or through the cases of police brutality. And it's not even just George Floyd. You can do George Floyd, you can do Breonna Taylor, we can do Tony McDade, we can do even Dominique Fails.
Elijah McClain.
We can do Trayvon Martin, Mike Brown, Tamir Rice.
Ahmaud Arbery.
Clipper Glover. You know, Randy Evans. Freddie Gray.
Laquan McDonald, too.
Laquan McDonald. Alton Sterling. Jordan Davis. John Crawford.
Philando Castile.
Sandra Bland.
And we just want to make this clear. Like, this is not... like in our lifetime kind of thing. This is very much like since we've been teenagers kind of thing.
Man, listen. Like, I don't mean to cut you up, Jesse.
Yeah.
I remember watching the Trayvon Martin trial. I remember it vividly because Trayvon is only 2 years older than me. And so while I never, my parents... I had a good life growing up in terms of like my parents would drop me off and pick me up from everywhere. I never had to, you know, walk through the neighborhood to go get whatever. Like if I wanted to, you know, they would drive me to there. But I remember watching everything unfolding and being like, how could you not? He was a 15-year-old kid, right? And I remember the not guilty verdict coming down for George Zimmerman and like the anger and the pain that rolled through my body. Because I just knew. I knew that this country wasn't built for black people, despite being built by black people. But I just knew, like, you had to. He's a kid. And he didn't get the justice that he deserved. And that was when everything changed for me and everything shifted. And then Tamir Rice happened. I mean, police pulled up on and killed that little boy 20 seconds max. Because he had a toy gun and he was sitting in the park minding his business. So, and I saw my dad in Philando Castile or Alton Sterling. Alton Sterling was the one where his son was like crying and you could hear him just wailing in the background like, I want my daddy. And that like broke me because my dad was my hero, right? Like, or is my hero. And like, that's like all of these have happened within such a short period of time in our life. It is so frustrating and it is so demoralizing and it is so numbing. And I can't even put to words like how angry it makes me, but also like how just like here it comes again. You know, like another one. Like it's just
so all those names I've listed and all the pain and stuff that you felt, that's like all that we have seen like within this decade. But we gotta understand that the policing and the brutality and the dehumanization of Black bodies has been going on since they have been abducted and taken away from their native lands and brought here in the Americas for the spirit or for the sake of capitalism. That has always happened. And so what we're seeing now is a reflection of such. The thing that gets me is that these are essentially public lynchings that we see constantly. Of these videos of people being shot, of innocent Black bodies being shot and killed. And when I say innocent, I mean innocent. I mean, like, there are countless of times of where we have seen a juxtaposition of how police officer handles white criminals, of how white criminals are being more aggressive or more aggravators. And while we have seen, and rightfully, and we have seen Black criminals that we would not agree with the actions they've done, it doesn't justify them getting shot multiple times. It doesn't justify putting your knee on your neck or being even more aggressive with them. It does not justify that in no way or form. But of course, there's always a justification of such because everyone doesn't want to believe, or not everyone, this always gets so irate in the idea of that Black lives in this country simply don't matter. And it's really frustrating because we yell out Black Lives Matter. Because this country believes Black lives don't matter. And then that's all, and you can see this in the ideas and the things of, well, we don't know the full story, or the officer acted in self-defense. Officers have policing is a stressful job. Not to say it's not a stressful job, but then here's the beauty of racism. Taking something that we are clearly seeing that has historically happened and then personalizing it with one particular job and then just saying that because that job is stressful, that underlyingly justifies everything that's happening. And most folks will say, well, that's not what I'm saying. But what most folks don't understand is that in saying and not trying to balance the two out of historical injustice of Black folks and policing, you are automatically favoring the latter over the former. Or when you say all lives matter or Black lives matter too. All these things like that happen. And then we're talking about the death of George Floyd. We're also talking about the death of Breonna Taylor. We're going to talk about the death of Breonna Taylor and how that springs off of as to how African-American women in particular are also impacted by systems of school-to-prison pipeline or prostitution or even sex trafficking work or even historical reasons of historical ideas of being sexualized and then being assaulted by not only racist, or not only that those are sexist, but also sexist and those are colorist and within their own community. We can even get more, like, even talk about more of the LGBTQ plus community, because we can talk about Tony McDade. We can even talk about Dominique Fales. We can talk about a slew of other trans and other queer Black folks that have been harassed, that have been killed because of their sexuality, and then because of their gender, and then because of their race and ethnicity. And this is what upsets me, because not all of a sudden companies are now coming out and now using the verbiage that we have been using for years, systematic racism and using it in Black Lives Matter. Now, all of a sudden companies are coming out and saying Black Lives Matter. All of a sudden companies are coming out and saying that's in systematic racism. Now companies are saying the one way how we're going to defeat this is by starting a dialogue. The beauty about capitalism is that it will never stop in trying to find a way to make money. Even in something in which it is flawed in, it will always find a way to make money. The beauty about racism is that it will always find a way to take the issue that's directly at hand and flip it. Because a lot of militarized police that are in these areas, let's say Chicago, Albuquerque, Baltimore, St. Louis, are the example of Operation Legend. Which was created under the Trump administration after the death of a young person of color in St. Louis, I believe, or is it, I believe, in Kansas City. And so because of that death, the Trump administration in many places would say, well, we need to crack down on places such as Chicago because there are a lot of deaths and a lot of drugs and a lot of violence that's happening in Chicago. And these Black Lives Matter protesters are an example of these criminals and thugs that are reigning within these cities. when they're not separating that the people that are protesting in Black Lives Matter are sick of the systemic racism and a harsh brutality that's going against those folks that you call thugs, those folks that you call thugs and drug addicts that are literally the byproduct of historical discrimination, housing discrimination, water discrimination, a basic human rights discrimination.
Food deserts.
Food deserts. Food deserts. Or inadequate food. Or environmental racism, public health disparities. There's a slew of it. But this, it's really interesting that this country, even this country will never cease to impress me, because even when you think we're going there, we're not going there. We're not going there. I'm sorry. You know what I'm sick and tired of seeing this year? I'm tired of seeing Benjamin Crump constantly on CNN with another family that is crying because their loved one has been another victim within this chain. And then some family members, or even for Jacob Blake, who, here's the bizarre part. Out of all the names I listed, Jacob Blake is the only person that has been alive to tell his story. The only person that's been alive to tell his story. Think about that.
It's the people that look like me that support these ideologies of like all lives matter and things like that kind of piss me off. You know, you always hear the old adage of like, you know, if you rise up and, you know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, or, you know, you do X, Y, and Z, that your life will be fine, or, you know, whatever like that. But, you know, people in high, people who have high profile positions, high profile jobs are still getting harassed by law enforcement. You know, NBA players who have came out and said before that, like, you know, when they're not on the clock, obviously, you know, they'll get pulled over by somebody, and, you know, the police will eventually maybe find out who they are. But, you know, that first 10 minutes of the interaction, maybe they'll get treated just like any other person.
Dabo Sefolosha got his leg broke.
Exactly.
Sterling Brown got brutalized in a Walmart parking lot, I believe.
Exactly. And it's like, it just doesn't escape. And the thing that hurts me is that, like, of course it hurts when you see anybody die unjustly, but it's really sad to say, but like, saying a real position, you know, that I have, and like, and I think about, this could be any one of my friends, right? Like, and that's the unfortunate truth, right? Like, us as young Black men and young Black women, for that matter, like Jesse alluded to earlier, go out in the world every day and try to operate about our lives, but, you know, the world doesn't love us back, as many people have said.
So, like, it's also hard because, like you said, Derek, like you touched on, like, the world, feeling like the world doesn't love us. And that's real, because, you know, especially here in America, but this seems globally, like, Black people set the culture, and we are the culture, we set the culture, and then what we do gets bitten off of. But it's also something to where when we have something that is so much for us, like a Black Panther, and we're able to celebrate that out loud, and then you're literally the hero of that, the icon of that, Chadwick is taken away early. Like, that hurts on a different level, because I'll admit, I was someone that I'm a huge Marvel fan. And I was someone that, like, when Black Panther was out, it was like, yeah, y'all are doing a lot, man. Like, I get it. Like, but it's not like, there's no dissertations that need to be written. Like, y'all are doing a little bit much. And in retrospect, that's something that I wish I celebrated as something that was just for us a little bit harder, because, you know, you can't get that moment, those moments back. Like, but yeah, like, I definitely wish I celebrated that a little bit more. And now that, you know, we tried to record our first or our second or our first set of episodes when Chadwick's death was announced, and, like, it would just took all the air out of the room. Like, that was, you losing an icon like that, it's just hard. It was so hard. I think to me, what was amazing is that in the midst of all this, he was not only taking roles that put that put life to icons. He did, you know, obviously 42, he did Jackie Robinson, he did Thurgood Marshall, he did the Black Panther, all that sort of stuff. But he was also like adding and dropping weight at the same time, like in the in the middle. Like he did like four action movies, right? Like he did, or at least you know, big set movies. He did 21 Bridges. He did, you know, all of these are very. He did a lot of very physical roles. Like James Brown was a very physical role. Like Jackie Robinson, like you know, he had to go learn how to play baseball. Like all of these sort of things. And so for him to carry that with him this entire time, it's just really astounding. And you can see how much he meant to not only the people that he worked with, but in terms of like the things that were written about him and said about him, but also to just how much he meant to us as a culture and how we greatly appreciated someone putting our stories in a positive light. Like him and Tessa Thompson like turned down like slave roles and all that sort of stuff because like that wasn't uplifting in the way that they wanted to be. So this year just fucking sucks, man.
I didn't know what to think when we saw that news. Like Josh said, we were in the midst of trying to record, and then all of a sudden we're just like, this year has just been filled with so much turmoil. You know, like you all have said, like he was such an icon. The roles that he played brought those stories to the big screen, you know, for people to even learn, people who may not know backgrounds, right, of certain historical figures, you know, it allowed them to learn. I always enjoy watching him, you know, on the big screen. And the thing that just like gets me is that you really did see the impact like with him. You know, we talked about Kobe earlier and how his impact was visual too, but like just all the clips that I would see, you know, that day on Twitter, I saw like an old, it might've been Jimmy Fallon, you know, skit to where he was behind a curtain, you know, as fans were saying to a picture, you know, what he meant to them, man. Those moments you can't take for granted. Like I know Josh said he was joking, obviously, with the whole, like y'all doing too much. But like, when you really think about it, those are the moments that are important. Like little black boys and girls see these stories and they're like mommy, like look at her, you know, whatever, like imagine how little girls felt in Black Panther when they saw smart, you know, black women that look like them,
strong too, like they, like Shuri, Okoye, and Nakia were all very strong characters that were written, and like they had valid points, and they had like they had things to stand on, and like all that sort of stuff. Like the mom, Angela Bassett's character, I'm forgetting her name, but she's such a regal figure in that movie, right? Like all of these, like the fact that the Dora Milaje was like so highlighted and all that sort of stuff. And like, they're the King's Garden. It's all made up these very fierce, strong women, like that sort of thing. Like, yeah, like that for sure.
Representation matters, folks. Like it really does.
The thing that got me about his death is that you just immediately just saw the love and the respect that he had. Like, and it didn't feel out of place. It felt rightfully deserved. Like, you know, and of course, you know, you don't want to do this thing where you're trying to take him having cancer and him, you know, having the highest form of professionalism and twisting it as some type of ableist type of pornography, you know, just going like, well, he was sick, he was injured, so you know, you can do it too. You don't want to do that. But you still just need to acknowledge just how someone who is not only taking a physical beating but also a mental beating too. Yeah. You know, of how this is affecting him daily, and just him to show out and give everything he has on these roles, and how he just didn't let that define him, you know, that takes a lot of mental toughness. And again, I'm not trying to romanticize this, you know, I'm just trying to speak more so to his credit.
What really hit me, and Derek, you really touched on this, is when there's been very few people in Hollywood, actors, actresses, that have hit the mainstream to that level, that have been so dedicated to telling our stories. So to lose a guy in these times, a guy who we knew was very dedicated to telling our stories that we could connect with, when you have little boys and little black boys and girls who can look at a TV screen, who can look at a movie screen and say, I can see myself in him, or if Black Panther, I can see myself in her. It hurts to lose that because we've gone so long. I mean, we went so long without having a Black Panther movie. We've gone so long without having strong, strong black women in leading a movie in the way that we saw Black Panther, or being one of the lead actresses in a movie that was that strong. Yeah. So it hurts to lose him because there's been so many of us that can see ourselves in him or aspire to be him. And it really does matter to be able to share the same skin color, because a lot of times we don't, and it's just hard to keep believing. And another, to touch on another point, I know so much of this is happening to what Jesse was saying, because of the capitalist society. It's only happening because there's a profit, right? People are putting Black Lives Matter on the courts, in their press releases, whatever, because they see it's profitable now. But I still want to acknowledge, I still think there is some sort of progress, because even 5-6 years ago, there was so much pushback against Black Lives Matter. You can't even, you say that anywhere and people look at you crazy.
Yeah.
Or a company would never even think about saying it. Yes, there's a level of profitability to it now, but the fact that they're more accepting of it is progress. I'm mad that they took them this long to get to this point, but I'm glad you're on the bus, because we got a long, we got a much longer trip, and I'm not going to be mad at you for getting on at stop 53 when we got 80,000 more stops ahead of us. 80,000, just that's number. The case,
bro, I need a long break right now.
And welcome back. We told y'all at the beginning, we told y'all at the top that we are going to talk about serious things, and we did, a lot of things that came from the heart and things that weigh heavily on our mind. But we told y'all, we're going to get these jokes off. Even in the midst of a pandemic, we're going to get these jokes off. And I was listening to Bomani Jones a couple weeks ago, maybe even a month ago, and he was talking about this whole, like, we all know this whole Postal Service issue and how it's trying to rig the votes and et cetera, et cetera. Like, I don't need to go through that with you. Like, I don't, like, you know what's up. You know what's going on. And he had a point about how he ordered, I think it was like shea butter.
It was shea butter.
Yeah, he ordered shea butter, and it was taking him like forever to get to him. And I was cracking up at him because I was like, dang, you order off you order the shea butter. You got USPS. Like, oh my gosh. Like, you about to, or yeah, USPS, yeah. Life sucks for you right now. And I'm doing all this laughing. As y'all know, like, during this pandemic, during this quarantine, I grew my beard out. I grew my facial hair out. You know how it is.
You look good.
Thank you. I grew it out. Ooh. To cut it down. Had to cut it off, but then I grew it back out, and it came back better than before. So I'm like, you know what? Let me invest. Like, let me further invest in this beard. I've been growing it out. I've been doing the oils and whatnot. Let me man up and get a beard balm. Let me just go all the way in and let me get the moisture in there. It's gonna stick right. Let me just do that. I guess the Lord didn't want me to have a beard balm for a minute. So I ordered the beard balm through Amazon. And like Amazon, you think, oh, it's gonna be great, right? Like Amazon, I got Prime, it's gonna be here in a day.
Oh, you got Prime, you got money.
Yeah, that was another thing during No, I had to use Amazon more because I'm ordering so much more stuff because I'm like toilet
fuck
paper.
Jeff
paper.
Bezos. Me and all my homies hate Jeff Bezos.
But he got so much of my money right now. It's such a damn shame.
Nigga, you don't hate Jeff Bezos?
Just to speak for yourself.
You? Of all people?
Anyway.
Nah, fuck Jeff Bezos. My bad.
Well, Jeff Bezos needs to run me some money back because I got the beer bomb delivered. And you know how Amazon does. They take the picture when it gets delivered. So I'm like, all right, cool. But I know it's a picture is like, not looking right. I'm like, all right, this happened before where they take the picture and it's not really there. So they say, give it another 24 hours. I'm like, all right, I was hoping to use, I had planned my entire evening to use it tonight. Like, I had a whole setup with a face mask and moisturizer, but okay, I'll wait a day. It's all good. It's straight. It's fine.
My nigga said he a bad bitch on.
Hey, make no mistake in this group. Kobe is the bad bitch in this group. Kobe is by far the bad bitch in the group.
He's the baddest bitch of this group.
For real.
I had to adjust. So, luckily, Amazon, they said, you know what? We're going to send you another thing of it for free. All right, fine, for free. All right, cool. 2 days later, I see the picture. It's not there. It's not outside my door. They say do another 24 hours. I'm like, I'm not doing another 24 hours. You told me to do another 24 hours 48 hours ago. Start analyzing the picture, and I'm like, wait a second. This is like, it's my apartment complex, but this is in my apartment. So I realized what happened. They gave it to the I'm not going to say my whole number, my apartment number. I don't want y'all to come visit me. It's across the street. Like, the people with my same number, apartment number, but it's across the street. So I figured it out. Like, all right, let me just go walk over there. And the first thing I start thinking about, man, I'm not going to lie. I live in a decent, like, a nice area, like a decent apartment complex. Maybe not the greatest area because it's really not that much around here. That's not 5 minutes away. But it's a nice complex. So I'm thinking, man, we got security here. I know these people are nice. If I just took this box that I know belongs to me, would there be any issues? Now, let me not do that. Let me just knock on this door.
Well, you black as hell. Don't do that shit.
Yeah. Let me not do that. It clearly says my name on there. It has my address. The only confusion is you just gave it to the people across. Okay, fine. Knock on the door. And I'm like, man, I just hope it's not like a Karen that sees me and is like, excuse me, sir, what are you doing on this premises? I looked out. A black dude answered the door, but he was looking at me like I was about to rob him. He opened the door like, you know how you open the door when you think someone's trying to bother you, you don't want to be bothered? They're like, excuse me, sir? I'm like, yeah, man, that box right there, that's mine. I ordered it. And then I see, I'm assuming his partner, this other dude came up and he was like, looking at me like, did you invite this black man over here without telling me? I'm like,
they thought you were a unicorn. Oh, they thought you were a unicorn. Oh my God, they thought you were a unicorn, Kobe. Oh my God.
I just moved out there. I was like, hey, this is my box. You can see my name on it. I have my ID on me too.
Oh my God. Like, yo, now we got to put a unicorn next to your name. Oh my God, bro, they thought
you were what is unicorn. This terminology?
Oh my God.
Yeah, what are you talking about, unicorn?
A unicorn is that couple brings in to fuck together.
No!
Okay, I was right. I literally thought that's exactly what he was saying.
No! I literally thought that's what he was
saying. He said Kobe was the unicorn. Oh my
Kobe
God.
Kobe was a unicorn. Oh my God.
No, not that.
They said. Look,
delish.
They said Amazon package. Oh, he role plays. How much was this, babe?
That's not where I was going with this, but I'm glad Jesse brought this up. I think that's a good starting point. All that to say.
Oh my God.
Nothing happened from that night, obviously, or that midday. Not like what Jesse thought. I think the guy was just concerned because he saw this random black man at his door. He's thinking, Steve, put the good dishes away for us real quick. We don't want to let this guy in. I didn't go in their apartment. I just grabbed my box, went back. The beer bomb smells great. I'm so happy with it. Such a fantastic purchase. It was like $4. It was on sale. My beer is not really thick. I'm still trying to grow it out a little bit more because I have to shave it down.
Same here, bro. Same.
Never
here.
Been more moisturized. And I'm just glad. If it was USPS, I might still be in a situation where I may not be getting it for another month. I still haven't gotten my weight set. Man, I ordered that till the end of August. And I told you I ordered overseas. I know it's going to take a while. But I don't have a shipping tracking number.
Do you use like resistance bands type stuff?
Yeah, I use resistance bands, and now I'm starting to
like the ones with like the hooks on them, or the ones that you just like put around like your legs.
The hooks. Okay. The hooks. Yeah, no. I bought that too. I bought that, and that came smoother. That came in like a 2-3 day period. Now the weights, August 28th. It's been a couple weeks. I'm getting nervous. I'm hoping it comes. it didn't cost me much. Like I said, it came from overseas. And I'm like, I don't even have the thing is, I'm fine with not having it. I don't even got a tracking number. If I had a tracking number, I feel better. But I was like, this might be an L. It didn't, like I said, it's a weight set. It was an inexpensive one, so I threw caution to the wind. But close this out for me. I'm about to go cry now.
Oh man. Oh man.
This nigga is a pound town. They're just gonna take your ass to P Valley.
No. For Jesse Pink, for Derek Small, for Kobe Price, for Dre behind the scenes. Thank you all. Especially to Jay Alizier and King Boy for our outro music. We appreciate you guys. Thank you guys so much for listening to our first episode. Please share with us as many people as you can. Help us grow our following. Our next episode is going to be one of our origin stories. So you get a little bit of background on one of the four of us. Who is it going to be? I don't know yet.
You got to find out.
Until then, you can follow us on our social medias at Jokes Podcast. That's Jokes _podcast on both Twitter and Instagram.
And you also follow our Facebook page. From all of us to all of you guys, thank you so much for listening. We'll see you guys next time. For Chadwick Boseman, for Kobe Bryant, for Elijah Cummings, for John Lewis, for Bill Weathers, for Ahmaud Arbery, for Breonna Taylor, and for
Tony McDade,
and for George Floyd, and all of those that we have lost along the way.
Ola Utoyan,
really, rest in peace, rest in power, and God bless the dead.